Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Well, Tom, the Triple H, Paul Levesque, Raw, SmackDown, NXT reunion, summer tour, whatever we're calling it, continued. It rolled on tonight. Dexter Lumis showed his face, dragged Miz to who knows where to do who knows what. And Johnny Gargano and Theory reunited. What was your favorite moment, Tom, of tonight's show? An NXT-related moment, I should say.
So we'll narrow it down. Well, of course, it's an easy pick. I'll tell you what, around right when Johnny Gargano came out, I was just thinking, man, I'm starting to get sleepy. Usually when I know I'm going to be on the show, I'm ready to go. I've got more energy, but I'm fighting it here. I might need to have a late night energy drink or something. And then Rebel Heart hits out of absolute nowhere. And Johnny proceeds to cut a promo that sounds exactly as cool and down to earth as his NXT State of the Gargano promos that he would occasionally put together. Now live in a world, you know, I won't be glowing about the show overall because there were 2 hours that happened before that that seemed more like a glorified house show. But boy, did they make up for it in the third hour. And we now live in a world where Johnny Gargano showing up on Raw leaves me extremely optimistic and probably leaves someone like Cody Rhodes sitting at home like, I do still have a spot, right? Guys.
Tell me what you like about Johnny Gargano. People listening to this show, I think the vast majority have experienced quite a bit of his career, but there's a lot to his career. He made multiple references to NXT. Talk about what he brings. He doesn't bring size. And thankfully, under Paul Levesque, that doesn't seem like it's going to matter at all. He brings a likability and a level of kind of like a maturity to his character, talking about being a dad, and a kind of a straightforward, almost John Cena-esque, minus the syrup and the schmaltz, wholesome babyface character. He was a very different character in NXT in his last run, but a blast to watch. Talk about Gargano and what his strengths are and what you think, and based on the Cody reference, you think his potential is pretty high under Levesque's booking.
I do. I do not think it's a mistake. I mean, you know, he said Intercontinental Championship first, and I thought, okay, we're being realistic on the main roster level here. And then he invoked WWE title, and I just thought, you know what? I mean, yes, there's Sammy, there's KO, there's Ciampa, and we may see them tied in with one another, but Gargano is among those where if you are going to trust them in a Triple H booking world where just based on the NXT history where he was for the majority of that run able to use the taping schedule of taping between 3 and sometimes 8 episodes at a time, so committing to storylines that far out, if we are going to commit to long-term stories, like he said again on that Logan Paul podcast, that it's about storytelling, Gargano is chief among the people that are tried and true already under the WWE umbrella of doing exactly that kind of thing. And you could absolutely plug that in on the WWE championship level. And that would have been a true statement under Vince McMahon, but it would have been pie in the sky. Now it is still true, but feels, attainable. No, not next month, but Gargano, what does Gargano bring? He's somebody who, and I'll be curious if we get an on-site tonight, because I'm wondering if the strategy was to pick a spot, pick a town that responds well, historically and specifically has a history of appreciating Gargano, and he's had some big matches. I mean, he pointed out one, but he's had the last time he was there was in 2019 against Adam Cole in the main event for the NXT Championship. They used the replays of the crowds in commercials for a year or two. Well, maybe a year. The crowd was going nuts. So what does he bring? You might not look at him immediately and go like, well, wait, why is he saying, he even said himself, oh, I'm kind of a big deal. Why? Well, I wasn't sold on him either when I was hearing, I was sort of like in and out during the Finn Balor, Shinsuke Nakamura days of NXT. That's when Gargano was really having his early rise. And I was hearing about it. I was seeing it at least on the takeovers. And I was still kind of like, yeah, why that guy though? But the word that leaps out, and it's right there in his theme song, so it's an easy one to think of, but it is heart. And he, yes, that last run in NXT that I know you were more in favor of than I was, although it absolutely had its moments, was an aberrant one, but he always brings that heart. And in that sense, he was the successor to Sami Zayn in playing the long-term underdog babyface role. And he was there on NXT long enough that he flipped heel baby several times. But this is a guy who feels like he is legitimately scratching and clawing, just like Sami Zayn was 8 years back in 2014, to get wins and championships. And that even became a catchphrase for him for a little while there. Wins and championships, wins and championships. And you will see that. And I will always point people to Johnny Gargano versus Andrade Almas at the January 2018 TakeOver Philadelphia. It's just an incredible, one of the best matches I've ever seen, and most of it is because of Johnny Gargano's selling and just how much he makes you want to see him overcome what seems insurmountable and win that championship. So when he said Intercontinental Championship, I was like, okay, I immediately want to see the Andrade Gargano formula just plugged in to Gunther Gargano. And just, I mean, Gunther will destroy him and Gargano won't win, but in losing, he will make you believe. And that is what Gargano does.
I'm looking forward to a whole new group of fans getting to experience what you just described about Gargano. You know, I mean, it was fun for him to play a heel, but his ideal role, obviously, especially because of his size and just his likability, his wrestling style, is to play the character that he came out and played tonight. Were you happy with that, by the way? Was there anything you would have done different in terms of him introducing himself?
It caught me at the exact right moment. That's purely subjective. I needed something to wake me up, and boy, did that do the trick. But it did feel very random. But as soon as it was in front of my face, you know, in at whatever point it occurred in the third hour, usually dumping grounds probably a little mean, but usually not the most eventful segment of Monday Night Raw. Once it was in front of my face, I felt like it was significant. It's something that, as a fan who has tracked his WWE career, I've been in the back of my mind waiting for, and boom, there it was. So, and then of course there's the nice poetry of Austin Theory being the first to greet him since they were aligned in NXT, and thankfully staying true to his current character. I was worried they might wishwash that a little bit for NXT fans, but I'm glad they stuck to that. You know, it's hard for me to try to nitpick it apart right now because while it did feel random and out of nowhere, it also did very much work for me.
Yeah, I am. I'm thinking that Gargano's presence can help Theory. I think it's a next logical thing for Theory to be involved for. It's a good way for Gargano to be introduced, but it's a really logical next step for Theory to get him on a separate track from where he was. And they have a chemistry together. So, and now Theory's going to have a chance again to show how good he can be in the ring, you know, maybe quiet some skeptics that he's going to underwhelm when it comes to ring work. I guess not to switch too sharply, but it's who we're talking about. I want to get your thoughts before we pause the show and get the callers on how Theory's been doing. Another NXT alum, and now he's got a whole new opponent who, like I said, he can shine against in the ring.
Yeah, I don't really have too much new to say there, just in my own pushback against what has seemed to be the consensus that at least I've sensed regarding, like, oh no, Triple H taking over is going to be real bad for Vince's boy, Austin Theory. Austin Theory was the Triple H guy. I mean, Triple H stuck by him in NXT and made sure that Austin Theory had a spot on the card. And heated him up a couple times. So I believe that Austin Theory is a Triple H guy. You know, I don't know, maybe there's something that the consensus doesn't know, but having paid attention to that and covered it on the Daily Cast lineup, I feel like that's the case. So I am still optimistic for him, and I still feel like he in the ring is showing everything that he has always shown since he was in Evolve. He is prodigal with his in-ring talent, and he is he's a genuinely obnoxious dude. So it works for his character, and I think he makes a good Mr. Money in the Bank, even though his SummerSlam aspirations, while I never believed they would come true, they still didn't even, you know, whiff any level of excitement. It was just a very tiny ingredient in what was a blockbuster kind of like special effects match otherwise. I'm optimistic, and I never worry too much when a Money in the Bank holder is losing a lot. It just sort of seems like different guys holding the book now, but it just sort of seems like the Money in the Bank formula.
Well, I'm looking forward to talking to you more about tonight's show, Dexter Lumis, and just the Paul Levesque era of WWE booking. I've really been looking forward to you in the rotation here being a co-host with me, and I'm glad we have about 6 or 8 shows now under our belts to review. So we'll get to that as the show progresses here, but let's pause and introduce the show first. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, August 22nd, 2022, and I'm Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter dating back to the late 1980s. I've covered every SummerSlam. Yes, I've been doing this a long time. And I'm also the editor of the website pwtorch.com, where you can find my live TV reports on Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday night. Pay-per-view coverage coming up in just over a week, covering a busy Labor Day weekend. Pair of events, and I also host a variety of podcasts and VIP exclusives like Everything with Rich Fan, which I recorded earlier today, and that'll go up for VIP members later, an hour dedicated to the locker room turmoil in AEW with me sharing my insights from the people I've been talking to there, and Rich updating his thoughts on it along with various social media interactions that give some windows into some of the problems that Tony Khan is dealing with. That'll be coming up for VIP members later. I also host The Fix with Todd Martin every Thursday. We usually go, I don't know, 3-4, sometimes close to 5 hours, reviewing current events and answering some tremendous VIP email contributions from our VIP members. And I also host the Wade Keller podcast and post shows along with some other podcasts. So thank you for joining me and Tom tonight. And that Tom I speak of is tonight's co-host, Tom Stauff, from PWTorch.com and the PW Torch podcast lineup. Tom, tell people a little bit more about you, your background with Torch, and how they can hear you on a regular basis.
Well, thanks. Here's the first thing about me. Now I want to go back and read your analysis of the Mega Powers versus the Mega Bucks. But yes, we are just having a grand old time on PW Torch VIP. Kelly Wells and I, we are doing the NXT retrospective, NXT 8 years back, as I suggested earlier. Sami Zayn is on the rise right now. The episodes drop every Saturday on the anniversary of the episode airing, and we are currently in the build to the second event that was actually titled TakeOver. The Four Horsewomen are a thing on the brand right now. It is we are in the NXT heyday, so it's a good time to be watching. And one of the funny things about the retrospect too is that while we absolutely have rose-colored glasses regarding that era, we also pick the episodes apart quite a bit. It was not all rosy. But and I also do bonus points tracking WWE developmental as filtered primarily through the NXT preliminary program. Bonus Point is the name of the show. Level Up is the name of the preliminary program. And oh my goodness, there has been so much developmental news this month. I'm probably going to be recording that this Saturday and dropping it on Sunday whenever I end up recording it. And it's going to be a meaty one, flying through a lot of headlines and new signings, talking about Valerie Lareda and so on.
Awesome, Tom. Thank you. Let's give out the phone numbers and the email, and then get on with our conversation. See where the callers lead us. We got some good emails waiting us too. The way to join the show, if you're live streaming, is calling 347-215-8558. I'll say that slower, 347-215-8558. When you call, please push 1 on your keypad. That's like you on our switchboard. You can also email us, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, let's get rolling. We got so much more to talk about on the show and also big picture. I'm with you, by the way, Tom. I was kind of thinking once we got into the third hour and then we had a Priest Edge match coming up, which, you know, I thought would be, you know, intense and they'd work hard, but not probably a Matt Classic. And I'm like, man, this might be a short show or we're going to have to kind of stray off of Raw specific topics. It kind of felt like, yeah, like you said, a glorified house show, maybe Hunter already, you know, burning out a little bit, maybe get ready for his fantasy football draft or something, which he does not do, at last I heard. So, yeah, but instead we ended up with some newsworthy stuff. So we got a lot more to get to, but we'd love to talk to our callers and let them lead the way. So let's do it. Let's begin with Brad in New York. Brad, good to hear from you again. What stood out for you on Raw tonight?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. You know, I thought, first of all, that, and I'm sure you guys would agree with me, the third hour, you know, it just far superseded or just was so much better than anything really in the first 2 hours. I mean, the KO, you know, thing with the Alpha Academy was good. But to me, the first 2 hours really did not seem too good. And I think the show really started super slow with, you know, Trish Stratus coming out, but really nothing leading to it. She's not even ringside for this women's championship match. Bianca came out, you know, it led to nothing. So I was very disappointed for the first 2 hours. And then, you know, you have this Johnny Gargano thing, which I got to be honest, I'm not like going crazy over him because I, you know, when you see Theory come into the ring with him, you know, Johnny Gargano looks like a 12-year-old kid next to Theory. I mean, Theory looked enormous. And he looks like a pro, and Gargano looks like a kid you see in, like, your high school, you know what I mean? Or, like, a guy walking around your college campus, which is fine. And I know a lot of people love him. He got a huge reaction, obviously, which I was kind of surprised at, to be honest with you, that he was that popular in Toronto. I don't know how you guys feel about that, but I got to tell you, with Theory, I love this guy. He has become a top five person in WWE for me currently. And, you know, and that's with some pretty great people in that mix for me. And I just think he has every element. He's very funny. His promo was awesome tonight. I just felt like Raw was really missing him the last few weeks. And he does do something to elevate the show. And I'm just surprised, and I'll let you go after this one point, but I'm surprised that there's such a visceral reaction to him. Like, and I understand that's the point of it, that he's a heel, but most heels still do have a faction of support. Like, it feels like in all these arenas, like, unless this is just really good TV editing, like, there's no one clapping for him. There's no one excited to see him except to boo him. And I love this guy. And, I mean, do you feel like, am I one of the only people out there that feel this way, or – do you see greatness in him as well?
Tom, I'll throw to you first.
My response is a short one and one I've given before. I see John Cena potential in him. I think I've seen it for a while in him. So I don't think you're speaking hyperbolically, Brad.
Yeah, I agree. I'm high on him, and I think WWE's high on him, and I think there's he's still got some, you know, still got something to prove, but I think he's on a good path.
And were you guys surprised at the reaction to Gargano and thirdly, just the direction of the show? Like, I just thought the first 2 hours, again, were just very underwhelming. And then the third hour, Obviously the end match was incredible, but I just didn't really feel it the first 2 hours. And then the third hour was just like, wow.
Tom, talk about that. What kind of thoughts were going through your head the first 2 hours? Elaborate on that. Because one trait we've seen of the Paul Levesque booking era so far is a priority on having bangers, as Corey Graves is calling them. And, well, you know, it's the word of the year, I guess, in some ways. And wanting to make a statement that, you know, you've got to be able to wrestle, and if you can, we're going to feature you, and the matches are going to go longer, and we're going to have a higher content of wrestling. Was today an example of at least for a while, pushing that too far?
Yes, absolutely. I think I was making concessions in my notes, like just trying to find ways to give things a pass. Like, why is Bailey Aaliyah going on this long? I mean, okay, I guess Bailey doesn't look like she's exerting herself because she knows that she can beat Aaliyah anytime she wants. All right, I guess I give it a pass. But also, as Brad pointed out, bizarre that Trish was out there, had very little energy, and then didn't show up again. She wasn't in the corner of the person, her fellow Torontonian that she had advocated for. And Bianca never showed up again. That was bizarre. And overall, the show just felt very hometown pandery. You're going to get that a little bit when they go somewhere like a London or a Toronto, but it was just really over the top. Almost not every segment, but almost every segment had an element of it that was integral to how we were supposed to feel about the characters on screen. And then they would go into these, obligatory 10, 13 minute long matches. I'm just not sure it was entirely justified this time. I'm glad the women's tag titles are being made to feel like a bigger deal. They probably they're vacant right now, and they probably feel like a bigger deal now than they ever have. But then Dolph versus Finn, KO versus Chad, I'm sure they loved wrestling each other. We didn't get a match that I felt was relatively meaningful until AJ and Lashley versus Ciampa and Miz, and that's just because those guys feel like they're all on a journey with one another right now. Everybody else, it was just like, it just kind of feels like they set up some really nice cameras at a house show.
Yeah. I'm glad that they, you know, he had some things to deliver after that. I just didn't want to have a downer of a review of the show, even if it had a good amount of good wrestling. Cause I still think there's an expectation and a desire for balance. And it could be an early sign that once sort of the bag of tricks of, you know, having some returns is over with, that he, you know, was sort of, even with the writing team and the support staff and so many people have been around a long time, that it was sort of like, uh-oh, you know, now we're just kind of throwing people out there with matches, since, you know, there weren't really major storyline developments with Clash at the Castle. So, in the end, I was pleased, but it doesn't eliminate some of the concerns I had early in that show. And, you know, Brad, I think, you know, you probably, well, I'm sure you're not alone. I don't know if you're the majority, but I suspect a lot of people were getting that feeling, you know, 2+ hours into the show. Nothing was wrong with it. It just wasn't, you know, electrifying, and it was just a little too much of the same thing.
Yeah, and my last point is just, and thank you so much for that. My last point is just, with the long matches, you know, if we're going to make this more of like a sporting event type of feel with Triple H, like a boxing match, yeah, you have some that go 10 rounds, but you have some like Michael Spinks and Mike Tyson that go 90 seconds. Like, I don't need every match to be 15, 18 minutes. And I've said this before on the show, but like, it's kind of annoying, like knowing, okay, you're not getting a finish for another 12 minutes here. Even if it's Aaliyah and Bailey, you're not getting it. Like, and it's really starting to bother me, because I understand he's giving everyone their time, and everyone, you get your fair share of time, and you're going to be featured. Don't worry. But like, there is a place for a 3-minute match. There's a place for a 6-minute match. I don't need everything to be 20 minutes. And it's kind of getting a little annoying And that's the one criticism that I really have of this, other than, which I've also said before, that he's kind of taking away the fun. Like, I like lighthearted Kevin Owens. That's just me. I don't want to see ultra-serious, ultra-angry Kevin Owens prize fighter all the time. I want to see funny F Kevin Owens, too. That's going to be gone, you know, or it seems like it's going to be gone. So, whatever, but the long matches are really bothering me, guys, and you guys do a great job. Thank you so much for taking my call and letting me ramble a little bit.
Thanks, Brad. Didn't consider it rambling. That happens here. You're not guilty of it. Tom, you know, I was critical at times of AEW Dynamite, sometimes seeming like they pointed a camera at the ring and sent good workers to the ring to fill time. And there were certainly aspects of that here. You are on record and clear about what you like about pro wrestling. Give me a little bit of a big picture overview of the positives and negatives so far about what you've seen with Paul Levesque.
Yeah, I think it always helps contextualize where I'm coming from to remind everybody that I'm the guy who was flipping channels because I was sick of Married with Children reruns on whatever channel that was. And I saw, it was me, Austin. It was me all along. And I was like, ooh, what was that? I think I'm going to tune in next week. So that's what hooked me. And if that era of Monday Night Raw had every single match being 15 minutes, I wouldn't have stuck around long. Because it's the story and the character that brings me to it. Now, I just spoke about the heyday of NXT that I think pretty much the majority, at least, agrees that about seven, eight years ago is when NXT really hit its stride, and that at its absolute best. Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, Charlotte Flair, Bayley, the tag scene. Oh, I guess the revival hadn't really come in yet, but you know, just really, really great television. Most of those matches go between a minute and 4 minutes. Kelly's the statistician when it comes to timing matches, but it's once you get to the main event where they send Tyson Kidd out there and Adrian Neville that it's just like, okay, these guys aren't nobodies. These guys are important. They are main eventers on this program right now. So it's not just a match, but it still just kind of feels like it's just a match where it's like, okay, it's the main event. We're going to send our top guys out there to do 12 minutes. So Triple H is absolutely guilty of that. And I think the later shows that were branded Takeover, I remember there was one, it was Vengeance Day, that you asked me for a written review of it. And I think I was the only person that just trashed the show. Cause I was like, all this was sending guys out there to work. And that's not what brings me to the table. So Triple H definitely guilty of that from time to time, but the character is what brings me to the table and win every single match. On that level of it, I 100% agree with what Brad said. You know, I need matches of different lengths. I don't need to see Dolph and Finn go out there and feel like, okay, we're going to get however long that ended up being. It felt like it was somewhere between 11 and 16. I will just say I like both versions of Kevin Owens. If I had to pick, I would take Sirius KO.
Interesting. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I'm with Levesque's booking. I mean, we're still in the early stages of it. We have this big track record with NXT and the evolution of his vision for what a wrestling show should be. And so far, like, to me, the bright spot is what I called, after that first Raw, after SummerSlam, the absence of irritants. And, you know, there's no 24/7 title. And, you know, like Chad Gable was entertaining tonight, but it wasn't like demeaning. It wasn't emasculating the women, I think, so far. I mean, in fact, Tom, I'll ask you, how do you think the women have been portrayed so far, and is it in any way markedly different than during the Vince era recently?
Markedly. I mean, everything we saw in Triple H's booking of the women in NXT, I mean, people want to go back to Paige and Emma, and they absolutely showed out when they were given the opportunity to, but it was just like, okay, those are the divas and they have their spot on the card. And oh, when they have a match, we'll have Renee Young on commentary. So it feels like they're getting a female spotlight, but it wasn't until the Four Horsewomen had really proven, like, no, we deserve this spot on this card. We deserve equal time and significance for our storylines. That Triple H woke up to, like, oh, this is viable. You know, yes. And then they continued to be, that division continued to be presented as an equal part on the card with your Asuka's and Shayna Baszler's and Rhea Ripley's. I mean, the NXT Women's Championship is my favorite championship in modern wrestling because I absolutely love the lineage of it. And it was so protected is the word coming to mind. I don't think it's what I really mean, but it really truly had a significance, and Triple H was spearheading that from behind the scenes with, you know, help from people like Fit Finlay or is he, I may be mixing up backstage producing roles here, but regardless, yes, I have noticed that mentality is coming through the screen now on the weekly TV, that it's not, and there were exceptions during the Vince era, but it always felt like after these women graduated, you know, as it or got the call
sure.
up from NXT. They did use the term graduated sometimes in the early days. It was rare, but it was there. You know, they got the call up. It did feel like there was a bit more of a struggle and sometimes a lot of a struggle depending on the talent and depending on, you know, how well Vince had been pleased with their latest pay-per-view match or whatever it may have been on the given day. That they were struggling to maintain that same level of significance. So yes, I've definitely noticed that change. And on your other point, I was thinking about, you know, yes, we are very early in it, and we are seeing more changes than we anticipated when we knew this change was impending. But it was during that Chad Gable match that I started to think, you know, if Triple H did a post-Raw conference call, like his takeover ones, he would probably say to that criticism something like, you know, what you're seeing right now is the beginning of a lot of new journeys. And that might be his reasoning for why it sometimes feels like not much is happening.
Yes, yes. All right, cool. Well, Brad, thanks for the call. If you're just joining us as we're live streaming here, the phone number is 347-215-8558. You're invited to call. When you do push 1 on your keypad, if you want to be brought onto the show, that will flag you on our switchboard. Area code 610 has flagged themselves. Go ahead and state your name and the city you're calling from, please.
My name's Matt. I'm from Delaware. How's it going, guys?
Doing good, Matt. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
I was just, you know, with the Aaliyah and Bayley match, I was going into it, I was like, okay, this is going to be a match where Bayley's going to kind of squash Aaliyah here. It's Bayley's first time back in the ring. And then it ended up being a longer match. And I felt like, and it was honestly probably the best match I've ever seen Aaliyah wrestle. And it was the longest match I've ever seen Aaliyah wrestle. But at the same time, she seemed incredibly winded by the middle of the match. Do you think that there's a downside to doing these longer matches with every single competitor, you know, because for that reason, if they're not used to working these longer matches, then they can get overexposed out there. And that's what I felt like happened to Aaliyah in that match.
Tom, it is interesting. If you're on the WWE roster and you want to be a major player under Paul Levesque, I mean, the time to get in shape is now. You better be ready. Talk about Aaliyah and just her background and your thoughts on her and what you thought about her performance tonight. Did you notice what Matt did?
I absolutely did. And unfortunately, you know, commenting on a woman's appearance, but I did notice, even when she was just standing backstage before she appeared in front of the crowd and was having a match, I looked at her and thought, like, wow, she's not as fit as she was in NXT. And granted, NXT, like, your full-time job is showing up to the performance center and being trained by some of the best people that there are to do that kind of thing. So it's very difficult to not have a good body fat percentage in NXT. But yeah, Aaliyah was a career jobber, and she was wildly ridiculed by the NXT audience. It was almost like an inside joke with the regulars just to that like one guy, and if you've paid attention to the quote Full Sail crowd, you would know who this guy is. Just like would jokingly, obnoxiously cheer for her, and everybody would not boo her, but boo him. And that's what her appearances were much more about. And it wasn't until like her final match on the brand that the crowd actually came alive for her. And it was kind of bittersweet because it was like, oh, it finally happened for you and you're not in front of this crowd anymore. Yeah, I believe this probably was the longest Aaliyah match I've ever seen. She's never been great. There has been a slow improvement over the years. It's definitely there. She was only in this match because she's from Toronto, because they were playing to that a lot tonight. And the best I can say is that if they were going to put her in this position, there is absolutely no one whom I feel is better to be on the other side of the ring from her than Bayley. Bayley is, and we, again, 8 years back, we can even see this when Sasha Banks isn't quite ready yet, but she is constantly in the ring with Bayley, who can guide her to the only, not just her Sasha Banks' best matches to this point in her career 8 years ago, but to the only good matches that Sasha was having at that point in her career. And Bayley can hide when she's guiding her opponent, her greener opponent, well, so you can't detect the guidance as much. And I feel like I probably detected a little bit of it tonight, if my perception was picking out the right things. But I think you're absolutely right, caller, that was just Aaliyah's relative inexperience. I mean, she's been doing it for many, many years, but nothing like exactly what this was tonight. And I think you're spot on there.
Matt, back to
you. I definitely felt like her wrestling with Bayley it elevated her. She looked, you know, like I said, that was probably the longest and best Aaliyah match I've seen, but at the same time, she looked tired. The second thing that I was thinking about was Gargano. I'm not the biggest Gargano. Like, I could take or leave Johnny Gargano. I sort of would agree with the previous caller. He kind of looked like a middle schooler out there, or really just more of a guy that you see on the other brand, on AEW. And what do you think his ceiling is, or what they're going to do with him on the WWE main roster?
That's a really pertinent and fair question to ask, Tom. Is he Daniel Bryan level potential, AJ Styles level potential, somebody who had a great body of work before landing on Raw or SmackDown, wins over the fans, wins over top management. It won't be hard to win over Triple H, of course, compared to Vince McMahon, for somebody his size. And if the fans respond, there's no limit to what he could achieve. Or for any number of reasons, is he somewhere under what, say, Daniel Bryan and AJ Styles have achieved?
Yeah, he's 35. He just turned, oh boy, just a week ago, he turned 35. And he's got 4 inches on Rey Mysterio, which which definitely doesn't make him anywhere in the realm of being a giant, but he's at least taller than Rey. But, you know, I agree. I tried to and have a history of doing so on this very show, tried to understand where Vince was coming from and look at Vince's history of success and just think like, okay, you know, he knows what draws the crossover audience. He knows what draws the mainstream audience. And if he looks at somebody like Gargano and only sees the height, you know, I defer to that, even though I know there's different potential there under different bookers for Vince's product. I would understand, and I would just hope that maybe Johnny's ceiling would be a standout tag wrestler. You know, maybe not even mid-card championship scene, just based on the way that Vince historically, with some exceptions like Ray, who of course was not not a Vince original, if you will, has booked people like that. But I mean, under somebody who already has a years and years long history of believing in Gargano. I mean, the story has been brought into the television characters on the NXT level that Johnny and Ciampa signed, or was it that they weren't working? Yeah, I say they brought the story in, and then I'm hazy on the details. But, you know, they were just coming in to work a few tag matches here and there. They were randomly put together. They didn't have a history with one another. And then it just took off, and they became two of the first people you think of when you think of that brand. So I think that he's absolutely the kind of person who can take you on a journey. Again, he's not somebody that stood out to me, even when people were trying to shove my face at his matches and go like, you are going to love this man. And I was just like, yeah, I don't know. And then he's one of the main people who's had me on the edge of my seat at big events, at the climaxes of his stories. So, yeah, and I think Brad had asked again if we were surprised by the reaction, and I blew off that part of the question. And I looked back at the TakeOver Toronto attendance when he wrestled Adam Cole in the main event, and there were 13,700 people reported to be in the venue. And I have to imagine that, I mean, at least a fair chunk of the people who were at Raw were probably those same people who also have been wondering what Gargano's status has been over the past 9 months. So that's just my guess, is that there was some familiarity, and that may have been a reason to choose this crowd to do this in front of. So somebody who's out there saying, hey, I'm kind of a big deal, can get backed up by the audience agreeing with him.
And that is important. That is an important first impression to give off when you're appearing on national TV. If a pin is dropping and you're, you know, supposed to be a big deal and the crowd isn't reacting, you know, that can get you off to – that can be a setback that is difficult to make up for compared to getting a huge reaction. Because what you want is people sitting at home going, well, I don't know this guy, but this crowd really is into him. I should give this guy a chance. There's got to be something good about him. This guy's got to be, and that's what AEW has relied upon. You know, is the ticket buying audience is reacting huge when wrestlers show up, even without any context or introduction otherwise. So I think Gargano got a nice response, and the Johnny Wrestling chant certainly stands out. Matt, back to you for any follow up or a different topic.
Well, yeah, that honestly, for me, like I said, I could take him or leave him, but the fact that the crowd just went nuts for him made me feel like, okay, I'll give him a chance for a little while and see where it goes. But, you know, we're seeing a lot of guys like I guess tonight we had Trish Stratus because she's a lady, but because we were in Canada. Next week we're in Pittsburgh. We're going to see Kurt Angle, Pittsburgh native. Are they going to bring out a legend from every city they go to? You know, if they go to Long Island, are we going to see Mick Foley? I mean, It just seems a little bit that, like, that's not something that they've been doing. It seems like something new. All of a sudden, every city they go to, we're getting this legend there. And then also, I felt like the Edge and Priest match was outstanding. I didn't think Edge had a Canadian destroyer in him still, and a lot of other things, just back and forth great. I have to say I groaned a little bit when the Judgment Day entered the ring and, you know, stood tall over Edge, but what saved it for me was Beth Phoenix coming in with the chair. And so that being said, do you see moving forward some kind of mixed tag situation with Beth Phoenix and Edge again against Rhea Ripley and whoever from the Judgment Day? Or do you think that we're going to get an Edge-Balor feud? Where do you see that situation going?
Tom, your thoughts, including on the match quality with Edge and Priest.
I thought the match was good. I have been, you know, not thumping a Bible or anything, but I have been a believer in Priest, and I wish his offense had looked a bit better overall. Looked, I guess soft, you know, but I macro take a main event, and I don't just mean the match that went on last, but the match that is getting the most focus, that which usually in this current era of Raw does not go on last. but a main event of Monday Night Raw has not felt this significant in a while. You know, storyline built for quite a while. I personally believe that Damian Priest is the correct final boss for this Judgment Day storyline, even though it looks like Finn Balor actually is going to be in that role. But then they also built it up during the show, and those entrances were massive. I mean, Edge's entrance always is big, but he really leaned into it. And then Priest is watching there, looking one rat scratch away from being a Roku Saki. I was absolutely sold on that. You know, I was already interested in the match, but definitely like, okay, I'm going to go refill my drink now so I don't have to step away. I'm in. And I liked the moment of Beth's moment. As soon as they showed her at ringside, I was like, oh, okay, they're going to do something with Rhea, because Rhea is just the odd woman out in a men's feud. She doesn't have anybody that she's allowed that is allowed to hit her on television. So of course they're going to insert Beth there. And, you know, thank goodness Rhea is somebody who, like, you know, a year and a half from now, depending on what plans they have for Shayna Baszler or Becky Lynch, you know, is absolutely somebody that you can look at to just soar under Triple H's guidance. But with the Judgment Day, she's just come off like the Luna Vachon's WWF run. And all due respect to Luna, who had a lot more that she showed outside of the WWF umbrella. But with WWF, she just kind of followed men down to the ring and scowled. And that's what Rhea has been doing, and it's just like, man, how is this where she's at right now? So even though we're not seeing it now, optimistic for her future, glad that she's going to have something to sink her teeth into. I personally won't be surprised if it is a singles match Edge is more focused on Finn. Again, not where I would personally take it, because I would like Priest to feel more final boss in that regard, but that's just me not being a huge Finn Balor fan, so that's just me being subjective there.
Yeah, and I think they're going for a group of equals, you know, a trio of equals, and I think that's their goal, and not to have a strict hierarchy. But Ripley, the youngest, Balor, the longest tenure, Priest, you know, under the previous regime, having the most upside, but also seemed like some of that Vince just didn't quite feel was latching on fully in ways that would cause him to accelerate his push. So being in the group is a way to sort of mask some of his deficiencies and also just let him feature his strengths. Well, what have you thought of the evolution, I guess, or the journey that we've been on in terms of the presentation of that trio and then in the Judgment Day, Tom, and the promos? Because it's sometimes just kind of keeping it simple and basic is better than trying to be too spooky or stylistic. And it seems like it's more been kind of get a good camera angle pose and then cut a more just straightforward promo.
Yeah, it's been really rocky for them. Tonight was a good step forward. Unless they've had these individual entrances before and I just didn't clock them. Tonight, you know, Balor's got Prince on the screen. He's got his own music. It all has the same theme and has the same, you know, cadence to it and is using the same key instrument. So it all sounds like they belong together. But then Priest is coming out to a version of his Archer of Infamy theme or whatever that was called. So it's they have that individual identity. So I'm definitely on board with that. The AR graphic that they're using, I think they might need to make it smaller because it takes up so much of the arena that you don't know exactly what you're looking at. It's just this big CGI thing, and you don't know exactly where it is. And it's not like, you know, it's an AR graphic because that's what they do, but you don't get the sense that it's in the arena because you don't. It just takes up the whole screen. But yeah, I don't know. It's been really rocky for Judgment Day, and I you know, one week I'm like, oh, okay, it's kind of gelling. And then the next week I'm like, man, I don't know what they're doing with these guys. And the first 2 hours of the show, it's like, again, with Finn and Dolph, two people who, Dolph I've been hot and cold on over the past ever since Del Rio kicked his head off. A little backstage promo from him, even though they're getting more time for that, as basic as it was, it's just not going to get me, you know, turn my temperature back up on him. And these are guys that I'm looking at, and I'm like, I kind of feel like they should be backstage producers by this point, or working for a different company, or Dolph should be doing a stand-up comedy, and yet they're out there putting on the match that they put on, and Rhea's scowling at ringside, and I'm like, man, thank goodness Damian's in the main event, because otherwise I'd be wondering, you know, what these guys are up to.
Matt, I'll throw back to you.
Yeah, I did think that the new music for Judgment Day was good, at least good to change it from the same music they had when Edge was leading it. I felt like Priest's offense may have looked a little bit soft because he was trying to use other guys' moves, like the Unprettier and things like that. But what I liked about the match was, like, a lot of Edge's matches in recent memory are very self-indulgent and long and slow and plodding. And this was just very hard hitting and, you know, it just was real exciting. But that's what I liked about that. The last thing I just wanted to do is tell you a story I forgot to tell you last week from the house show I was at. R-Truth had come out and, got on the mic and got the crowd going. He said, hey, I remember when I was a little kid, John Cena used to dedicate his U.S. title, or he used to defend the U.S. title open challenge every week. And I'm thinking, and all the crowd was buying this. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, R-Truth started in 1999 with the Road Dog Jesse James, you know? And then, so he ends up fighting Veer in a squash match. Veer beats him, and then he gets on the mic and says, "Never mind, I do not dedicate this match to John Cena." So I just thought that was pretty funny at the house show. But
cool.
Other than that, that's pretty much all I got. I mean, I thought it was a little bit the Dexter Lumis abducting Miz thing. I don't know where they're going with that, but I don't know if you guys wanted to talk about that a little bit, but that's pretty much all I got tonight.
Yeah, cool. Thanks, Matt. Thanks. Good to talk to you again. Sounds like a good way to lead into the Dexter Lumis talk, and we have to have that. What have you thought of the way that he has been introduced to the larger national audience, and what do you make of him dragging Miz away, and what is your opinion on him overall from his time in NXT?
Briefly, I'll just hit, because Matt jogged me on it, that I did appreciate what Edge did in the main event, because it does seem like he is very dedicated to helping Damian Priest translate to a mainstream audience, and even though I would have liked to see the relative shenanigans toward the end lead to a Priest victory, the story's not over yet, and I appreciate Edge's side of what he did there. As for Dexter Lumis, I think you got to be real careful when you're doing these angles in the crowd, because the fact that, you know, people know what they're watching now. We want to believe, but we know what we're watching, and you've got all these people who are just utterly giddy and smiling and laughing at Miz, at a human being. I mean, to be fair, it is the Miz, but you know, a human being dragged away by a stalker in a chokehold, and everybody's just standing around like laughing about it and not trying to intervene, not trying to, you know, jump the proverbial guardrail. I think you got to be real careful with that, because that hindered the moment. But as for Lumis himself, I mean, you know, much has been made about the little backstage hints and everything, and that's fun and makes you feel like you can't look away, like when Bray had the puppets popping up and so forth. But when Lumis debuted, you know, Samuel Shaw showed up on NXT. I mean, of course, it's like the name is just as bad as like Apollo Crews, where it's just they took like two things from the area of pop culture that his character is based in and just mashed them together, and it sounds terrible. But he was just a weird guy for the sake of being a weird guy, and he would crawl on his fists and have Stranger Things sounding music and glare in the camera and not say anything and draw caricatures for no reason. That he was an artist, which just bothered me because it had no purpose at all. So I really, really was not on board with Dexter for quite a while until they turned him into a comedy character. And then, and he was associated with Johnny Gargano's faction, the Way. Associated with it. He wasn't in the Way, but he was associated with them. He became an endearing character, and it just adding that little bit of extra life into a dude who, like, there was a battle royal, and he just stood in the corner the whole time because that's his character. But it wasn't amusing. It was just a dude standing in the corner the whole time. Like this, the comparison we always made was to Kane, but Kane had so much personality through the mask. This guy doesn't have to work with the mask, and he had less life than that. But just that little extra bit of that that comedy, the relation to the storyline relationship with Indy Hartwell, you saw it come through in his matches. And I believe it was he wrestled Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams, I think, were among his last matches on NXT. And I was like, you know what? I really, really liked those. This is probably the best stuff I've seen from him. And I was he genuinely had me rooting for him. So there is a version of Loomis that can work. And I guess all of that blabbing is just to build to the fact that I am overall in favor. You know, tonight I've nitpicked for him dragging Miz through the crowd like that. But I'm in favor of how they've introduced him because, yeah, he's not saying anything. Yeah, he's got that, you know, however many yard stare. Yeah, he's a weird guy. But it's not just for the sake of it. He's mysterious. We're wondering what his deal is. And he's got an MO. So I think it's a much more effective way to introduce the character. And I say that not knowing whether he is just going to turn into the same fist-crawling caricature drawing guy as he was in NXT, or if there are going to be different wrinkles this time.
He's the guy that if you go camping and he sets up at the campsite next to yours, you go to the front desk and ask if you can move to a new spot. that's who he is. And how you incorporate that into Raw going forward is going to be a challenge for Triple H because, you know, a lot of people are projecting onto Paul Levesque the best things they remember from NXT, the absence of the worst things about Vince McMahon, things that they've loved so far that they've seen in the last few weeks. And he's going to do some things that aren't for everybody. And he's not going to do point the camera at the ring, straight up house show, match with a couple promos only. You know, he's going to have some things that are sort of off that more just straightforward wrestling path. And, you know, Vince McMahon had his proclivities and quirks, and Hunter's going to have the things that he likes. So, you know, Dexter is one of the first tests of something that's being played. I wouldn't say it was played for comedy intentionally tonight. It might have been, you know, the intent might have been to kind of make it spooky or more serious, but it was Miz, not AJ, he dragged away. And what'd you make of the decoy, by the way? What was that about?
Oh, yeah, I just making sure that the security guards weren't going to stop him from dragging the Miz away.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, distract him from the other side. So anyway, well, I mean, I've been a fan of Dexter Loomis in small quantities. Having a weirdo without even a real sense of purpose, just hanging out and being creepy, can be a guilty pleasure. You know, I mean, it's just, he's so different and I just buy him, you know, like I buy that's not a gimmick, that if you live next to him, he'd be the guy who like mowed his lawn, but in a random pattern and you just didn't know what he was doing, you know, like, I buy that.
No, that's Jeff Hardy.
Yes. All right. Very good. Thanks, Matt. If you're joining our live stream in progress, you can still call 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. We'd love to hear from some first-time callers or infrequent callers. We know that there are people watching Raw and SmackDown who had not been because of the Paul Levesque news, and also thus people listening to us who haven't been for a while or never were before. So welcome or welcome back, and we'd love to hear from you. All right, up next, we'll go to William in San Diego. William, a regular caller, welcome. What stood out on Raw for you tonight?
Hey, guys. Thank you for taking the call. I wanted to talk about the opening segment. And I guess in a broader sense, I was wanting to get your thoughts on how you think they've been doing with that six women program that they've been building for the last few weeks. Because I thought they started out strong the way, you know, Bailey and her new friends attacked Becky behind or backstage at that Raw after SummerSlam, and it kind of felt like they were this new force of chaos, kind of the women's division, kind of disruptors, and it felt pretty exciting. But yeah, I think the first count caller touched on it, on that opening segment being kind of, you know, bleh. And I saw all those women standing there in the middle of the ring, and it already felt like, you know, Bayley, Io Sky, and Dakota Kai had been kind of normalized, and it's kind of felt like that for a couple of weeks for me. Like, they've just been taking part in the tag team tournament, just kind of maybe not, like, playing 100% by the rules, but it doesn't feel like they're totally disrupting the women's scene. It just kind of feels like, you know, they're part of it, and they've been part of it for a while. And also to kind of add a little to that, I also feel like Bianca has been doing the brunt of the talking for the babyfaces, and it just feels like Alexa Bliss and Asuka have just, like, taken, like, a huge step back. And I get that they want to focus on building Io and Dakota Kai at the moment. But, yeah, I don't know. It just feels – I feel like this could be better. Like, the whole program could be a lot better. I'm kind of down a little on it right now.
Tom, any thoughts on that?
I am such a huge fan of so many of the people that were involved in that segment, and it was kind of a dud, and the program, I'm sure the match, well, I would like to think that the match will be fun at Clash, but I had to be reminded who the opponents were. Even when Asuka and Alexa were coming out, I was thinking, why are they here? They were announced as being in a tournament match. What's going on? And I had to be reminded that they are part of that sixth person. So one of the key issues, I mean, I already mentioned that I think one of the key issues was Trish coming off as very melancholy and like, hey, it's nice to see her, but she just did not have any energy. One of the key issues here for me, and maybe I've missed something, but it doesn't seem to me like Bayley and Bayley's new faction, but Bayley has a clear mission yet.
Right.
And I've illustrated that I just adore Bayley, but it's just a vague sense of, you know, like you said, William, like they're there to cause chaos. But how much chaos has really been caused? It seems like they are there to regain what Bayley had lost and you know, get the tag team championships, get the women's championship. But I'm not sure that that's really been drilled in, that is why they are there. And I want them to be a really hot act, and it felt like they were going to become that in the first couple weeks. But now I'm waiting for that reason. And also, just as some extra details, I didn't care for Dakota and Io's emoting or Dakota is just better as a sympathetic face. I'm always in favor of introducing people as heels, but Dakota is just 100% better as a sympathetic baby face. And Io, I couldn't tell whether she was being sarcastic. You know, she was just so over the top with just how much she was gushing over how much she likes Trish. And it seemed sarcastic, but also she has not established her character on this stage yet, so it could just be her character added to the fact that with Trish not around anymore, when they won the match and the camera hung with her going back up the ramp, she was still acting that same way, which is a much more stereotypical Japanese female kind of characterization, and feels honestly very much like the way Vince might have presented Io Shirai or Io Sky. So I did not care for that element of it either.
Yeah, I was a little, Bayley's good. I always enjoy her work, but I am with you that it feels like she was kind of dropped in, and now I'm going to do sort of, you know, derivative best of Bayley with a couple new people to play off of that I'm going to try to help get over. And, yeah, I was with you on their reactions and whether, you know, how quickly EO turned. And it was like, well, was the first one sincere, or is she just a follower now that she is getting the idea of where Bayley is leading her? And it just wasn't clear to me. I mean, I'm not down on it, but I'm not like – I was hoping Bayley would come back and just be more of a centerpiece alpha legacy female star. And I feel like there's I get the feeling she's sort of just there to be there, and that what she is good enough, and it kind of is, but I still wish for more. Does that make sense, Tom?
Yes, absolutely. And I think she's the type of person. Watching that segment, my partner asked me, "Is Bayley ever going to be a babyface again? Because it seems like she's so into this heel role." And my response was, "I think she's the kind of person who eventually could reach a point where I said that she will, but you know, just being really realistic, she could reach a point where she has no choice but to be a babyface anymore because the crowd won't let her be a heel and they'll just adore her. I think she absolutely has that kind of legend potential. But yeah, I'm not feeling what we're getting week to week right now, even though it could turn around in just one episode of Raw after Clash at the Castle is over with. Speaking of being unclear about the segment, again, maybe I missed something, but another thing that didn't work for me here was that Trish teased wrestling, and yeah, she was like, well, I'll unretire, and she took her top off, and then Bayley just said no, and then Trish just seemed like she was like, oh, all right. And then later on, when she advocated for Aaliyah, my impression was that Trish was saying, oh, let's have a tag match, me and Aaliyah versus, you know, two of you guys. And again, maybe I misinterpreted it or missed a line, a key word that was used. But again, when Aaliyah just came out for a singles match and Trish wasn't even in her corner, I was just befuddled by that whole sequence of events.
Well, part of it is Trish was never even average on the mic. I mean, she might have on occasion had an average promo, but like her baseline expectation is not great on the mic. You know, I mean, it's just, she wasn't part of an era where they leaned on her talking much. And yeah, it's just, she doesn't really bring the energy and the charisma. You know, her strengths lie elsewhere. William, I heard you're acting in the background. Go ahead with anything else you want.
Yeah, I was just chuckling at Tom's point there. And another quick thing I wanted to bring up about that segment that, you know, I feel remorse if I didn't bring up because it's just the kind of thing that I feel like people would write, you know, long paragraphs on Reddit about if Vince McMahon was still booking. Trish Stratus is out there, you know, doing her promo, and then Bayley comes out, interrupts, and the commentators go like, oh, man, what's going to happen here? And they cut to commercials, and the two of them are just standing there, I guess, in the middle of the ring for 5 minutes until we come back, and that kind of adds to the whole thing that I've been talking about of them just feeling, you know, Bayley's new group just feeling like they're, you know, just a part of the roster now, like they're not really disrupting much, and yeah, that was kind of like the whole theme of that whole segment, like all women were standing there, and it felt like it was going to lead to violence, but they just ended up, like, standing there and, you know, patiently waiting for the referee to get in there and officially start the match, and everyone just kind of parted ways peacefully until the match started. But the other, in a much broader sense, I guess, thing that I wanted to talk about, and I don't want to, you know, like, bash Triple H is booking too much, especially because we've only seen a few weeks of it now. But I do agree that with you guys that the first 2 hours were kind of just kind of meh, you know. And but the more worrying thing for me is that I feel like there's already been like a couple Raw and SmackDowns that felt like I could have just missed them and I wouldn't have missed much. And it's kind of worrying that it already feels like that, like this soon into his new his tenure as the new head of creative. And I, you know, the all the debuts or the people who used to be in NXT coming back and everything, certainly adds a spice to it, and I'm excited to see how they're all going to do now that they're in the main roster under Triple H. But do you get the sense that, and I feel like this is something that people would even criticize back in the Black and Gold era, but do you get the sense that maybe sometimes Triple H plays it too safe? Like, you know, maybe we all had our nitpicks or our grievances with the way Vince McMahon used to book things, and I certainly would call every now and then to complain about the crazy choices he would make. But in the end of the day, I feel like he always made interesting, weird choices that you kind of had to, like, watch and see, like, man, where's this guy going? Like, well, what is he even thinking heading in this direction? With Triple H, I feel like I watch it and it's like, okay, good. This was a less than 2 or 3 hours of a wrestling show, but I don't feel like super emotional about it. Like when Vince did something that got me mad, like it would like really get me mad. But I feel like in a weird way, that would almost make like the hires seem higher. And with Triple H so far, and it's maybe a little unfair to judge like with only a month or so of booking on the main roster, but it feels like everything is just like at an even feel. You know, it's not that roller coaster that we kind of have with Vince.
Tom, your thoughts? The honeymoon's over.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of the Vince reaction that you're absolutely right about. I think it's just we had a history. We had we were familiar with the idiosyncrasies and had so many examples that we could look back on and just sort of feel like, oh, this again. Even if, as I keep saying, I tried to understand it as it went along. With Triple H, yeah, it feels like the returns maybe could have been spaced out more, but maybe he feels like he's got to put his stamp, like this is the window. This is the time where people are wondering, hey, what's got to change? So while keeping the face forward of this is still the same product, but then making the subtle changes and having the returns, it's enough of a statement to be like, no, this is my product now. And if you're tuning in to see what I'm doing, that is what you are seeing. And you're seeing the acts that I believe in and, you know, people that I'm not sure about are being reevaluated. I think that's the phase we're in, even if the pace does feel fast right now. But then, of course, you get stuff like this, the first 2 hours of Raw, and it's just what we keep saying. There's too much television to fill. And so you do get stuff like that. And I have a hard time faulting Triple H. And, you know, he's been preparing for this role for so long, so I'm sure it's not a surprise for him. But there probably is an element of like, okay, but this is the first time I'm actually doing it. So there probably is some stuff where he's like, oh, crap, I do kind of have to have a 2 hours at the beginning of the show that are like this. Even though there were three pretty darn good things that happened across the entirety of the third hour. Those maybe could have been spaced out. I think Triple H, and we saw this in the production of NXT as well, since NXT was widely, you know, of course, Triple H was definitely the main force behind it, but a lot of it was trying to create a miniature version of Vince's WWE to make the transition to the main roster an easier step to take for developmental wrestlers. So he's familiar with it, and he's practiced it in a sense. So there is that there.
All right, cool. William, anything else for us?
Yeah, one final topic, and then I'll let you guys get to other people. How much do you think they need to try to, you know, introduce Johnny Gargano to this new audience? Or I guess a better question would be, do you think Triple H is cognizant that he needs to make that effort? Because I still remember very vividly, it was this Raw, I think in 2018 or 2017 maybe, when they brought in a bunch of people from NXT, a bunch of NXT fan favorites, like Aleister Black, Johnny Gargano, Tommaso Ciampa, and and they were, I think they were in Lafayette, and the crowd was just dead for them. Like, Triple H came out, and he was talking about how they were, like, the faces of the future or whatever, and when he announced that they would all be there for that show, and, you know, when they went out and had their matches, like, people didn't care, and I remember, like, the entire internet giving the poor people of Lafayette who just didn't happen to care that much about NXT, giving them a lot of grief, like, come on, like, how can you not care about Johnny Gargano being there or Aleister Black or whatever? And it's just like, sorry, guys, we just don't know about them. So, I mean, I would hope that's something that Triple H would be cognizant about and try to make an effort, because it's, you know, I don't watch a lot of AEW, but I listened to some of your conversations about AEW, and I think that's something that you occasionally bring up about them, like, as a criticism, that sometimes it feels like, you know, if you're not in the cool handshake club where you don't know, like, the whole backstory behind Zack Sabre Jr. or whatever, you're kind of left out of the loop, and, you know, good luck trying to figure out what the background is between, the latest New Japan match or whatever.
Yeah, Tom, I think this was a good introduction to Johnny Gargano, but what next?
Just out of curiosity, the Lafayette show you're talking about, is that when the rest of the SmackDown roster was stuck on a plane?
No. I think it was, I very vividly remember it being a Raw. But yeah, that was another one. That was,
okay.
I think Adam Cole was on that one that you're mentioning, and that one got a much better reaction, if I remember correctly. So, you know, it's a town-to-town thing, obviously. Some towns will know who Johnny Gargano is. Some towns will probably have no idea.
I know exactly what show you're talking about now. I think this was a good introduction, but I also think that Triple H is cognizant of being at the beginning of a new journey here. I think it's really interesting. And, you know, we've seen varying degrees of NXT acknowledgement during call-ups. I think probably the most intimate was Kevin Owens confronting John Cena during the aforementioned John Cena United States Open Challenge and showing up as the NXT champion and destroying Cena. But Gargano coming out there and just saying, like, hey, it's been a while, as if he's just talking to an audience that is familiar with him. And you know, again, I love that he spoke in a way that was very familiar to his identity. But he just spoke as if it was the next episode of NXT that he was showing back up on and talking to an audience that he knew was familiar with him. But I mean, even Johnny's journey in NXT was an underdog journey where he did a lot of losing, and they even did a losing streak storyline with him. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see something similar, or at least with similar ingredients. And I think you can see that understanding of what needs to be done in front of a wider audience on these more flagship shows in what's happening with Tommaso Ciampa, because Ciampa was already associated with The Miz before Triple H got the book. Excuse me. But he didn't just get removed from that or accelerated away from it or anything. The storyline still makes sense. And just like in the way you hear Corey Graves talking about Tommaso Ciampa and why Ciampa wanted to align with The Miz and what he's gaining from the relationship, it's still it makes really good sense for the level that Ciampa is at. He's not just being accelerated to the top of the world, as we know Triple H believes he could achieve, because we saw him pushed that way in NXT consistently. So I definitely believe that at this early stage in his run, that Triple H understands that you can't just throw people out there and trust the audience to just be filled in on all the backstory and just hit the ground running.
Cool. William, appreciate the call.
Yeah, thank you guys for taking the call. Have a good one.
Yep, you bet. All right, before we get to some emails and maybe more calls, if some more people call up, we'll go to Kyle in Baltimore. Kyle, welcome. Good to talk to you again. It seems like it's been a while. What do you think of Raw today?
Yeah, it was good. I have a few things to to say real fast about first was about Roman Reigns himself. I know he's never on Raw, but I might as well talk about it because he's the WWE champion. I understand that he's a top star. He's not around because he want to keep it special. Because I called it Friday about this. I called the Roman Reigns problem because, you know, at some point he's gonna have to show up on Raw. He's gonna have to defend the champ. I mean, he is defended title at Clash at the Castle, but I just think I'm hearing other people on other podcasts talking about the Roman Reigns problem, and saying that they did like the fact that one point that he was want to keep him special and all this other stuff, but then since WrestleMania he just hasn't been doing. He just disappears. It kind of the same thing with Bianca Belair. Bianca has been completely hasn't done anything interesting as the SmackDown Women's Champion or now the Raw Women's Champion. Because I felt like that Bayley and Becky had carried that feud, and it's going to be the same thing again with Bayley carrying the feud with Bianca because she hasn't done anything interesting at all, credible as champion. And this whole thing with her being, you know, people wanted her badly to be a champion at WrestleMania, but then what? It's like, I even said that when time happened, it was like, well, then what? Because I feel like Becky's been carrying that feud, and she has been, and Bayley's going to carry this feud as well, because Bianca's done nothing. So what do you think about how to portray Bianca and Roman Reigns as champions when Reigns is never on Raw, and Bianca, the way she's been perceived on TV, has been nothing like a champion should be treated as?
I noted in the Raw opening, Tom, there's not even an image of Roman Reigns, and he is the top champion of Raw. What do you have to say to what Kyle said?
Part of me agrees with the, he's a SmackDown wrestler, so even though he's the biggest star in the company, I appreciate that they don't just throw him on there because he's a big star. But, like you said, he is the champion, so they've got the reason to, so why not? You know, plaster his face on there. He's generally well-received right now. I say that just because of we're coming off of Kyle's comments here where he's facing some criticism, but he is very popular right now, so just plaster his pretty face right on there. Why not? Different situation with Bianca. I did, as mentioned previously, I did think it was weird that she just sort of disappeared after what was really the second segment tonight, because the first was the Riddle and Rollins brawl. But yeah, I guess I would like to see more from Bianca. I just I think that whether she's playing up what her character, like whether she's playing up a caricature of herself, whether she's being something that's more recognizable as a human being, as you put it, Wade, or whether she's in the ring, I just think she excels at what she does, and it's weird that we haven't seen as much of that on the television program of late. And yes, Bayley does seem to be carrying the brunt of that feud. But yeah, with Roman, I mean, I'm the person that says over and over again about Brock's title runs that I appreciate when people that reach that level are kept special and it feels like a big deal when they do show up. And I love that Roman himself acknowledges it. He comes out there and he's like, man, I'm not here every week anymore. So people think they can come out here and run their mouths. And I love that. And so for me personally, and this may be tangential, if I think there's a Roman Reigns problem right now, we are so deep into his championship run where, like, when he comes out for his big matches, Michael Cole has the same lines that he goes to Pedro Morales, Bob Backlund, so on and so on. And I still feel like his championship run feels fresh, and I still feel like it feels important, and I'm still waiting for him to beat The Rock at WrestleMania, and then only once he beats The Rock at WrestleMania am I going to start going, okay, who's going to take Roman down now? I'm not worried about Drew beating him at Clash at the Castle. I don't think that's even a threat. I guess the wrinkle there is, well, do they do a program that ends up being for one championship and he holds on to Universal? And we've talked about that again and again in various scenarios, including factoring Cody Rhodes in there. So we shall see. But for me, the Roman Reigns problem is that the Usos are just the same things. I'm kind of, they're so talented, and I enjoy their work, but it's just the same thing over and over and over again. And so I am bored with the Usos right now, and I think I need the story to move on now to like, oh, well, Jay is starting to have second thoughts, and we get like a little Jay solo run again like we did during the pandemic era or whatever it may be. I need different wrinkles there because the Usos are boring me at this point. So that, to me, is the Roman Reigns problem, not Roman Reigns himself.
All right, very good. Kyle, back to you.
I guess different opinions, I guess. I just think he's been champion all for this very long. He has only one. I'm just also used to seeing the champion going, defending the championship with the same person over and over again, too. That's what I'm used to. And then his thing's been one and done, and that's then he moves on and moves on to who and then to and who knows whatever. I'm just kind of tired of it. But anyway, and then going back to this whole women's tag team championship situation as well, this is so it's really bleh, I guess, because also too, another thing too, I was kind of worried about Alexa because she was on the bubble last week on Wednesday. Her voice was like gone, so I was like uh-oh. So once she was talking, I was like, she's fine, so never mind. So that's good. So anyway, but this tag team tournament thing, you know, now that, you know, Toxic Attraction is no longer are gone from it, from Dee Dolan getting injured, I was like, oh my god, are you kidding me? Because I was thinking back on Friday, I was saying it's gonna be Toxic Attraction versus Io Sky and Dakota Kai. So I had my sets on that match already ahead of time when I first saw them on Friday. I was like, okay, well, and now that's out of the window. Now I'm just waiting to the point for them to win the titles, and I was like, when is this match going to happen? So now it's going to happen, what, they said next week or something like that, or 2 weeks from on Raw or SmackDown, we'll know still. So that's good. But, yeah, with this match happening on Raw and not a Clash at the Castle, I mean, like, you would think they would do a double match thing, you would think, for that show, because this is a random six-woman tag that doesn't really, honestly, doesn't mean anything. Cause it kind of does, but it kind of doesn't. But you think, what do you think is happening on Raw and not at Clash of the Castle, and they're doing the six woman tag just because they do it?
Tom, take what Kyle said and also just talk about what you think of the developments in the tag tournament with a couple substitutions along the way and now the, you know, the second chance situation they had to throw in tonight.
Yeah, and the second chance situation is really a pick'em for me because there's a Triple H darling on every single team. So I could rank the likelihoods and maybe say that like Sonya and Natty have the least amount of chance, and is it Zaya and Shotzi, I think, are a team, maybe have the most. There's another example of not just pushing his favorites out of the gate because he likes them. Triple H really likes Shotzi. And really looked out for her during her time in NXT, even though I've been quite critical of her work myself. And she's not just being pushed to the moon, but maybe she'll get this second chance win. But I think it's just as likely that like Tamina and Dana do. So I don't know. But I did hear your comments on the Friday show, Kyle, with Zach and Nate. And my thought as I was listening to it was that even with the necessary switch to top traction, and now the necessary switch to a second chance match, I think that the winner of that side of the bracket is the finalist of that side of the bracket has not changed. I don't think Toxic Attraction was going to be booked any differently than Zoe and Nikita were, and I don't think that the second chance winner is going to make it to the finals. So that's just my opinion. Maybe I'll be proven wrong, but I don't think that they are calling so much of an audible there to change the final match, which of course has Sasha and Naomi looming over it in the unspoken background, which may play into why it is not happening on Clash in the Castle. I know Clash in the Castle is going to be on BT Sport, but it's not on American television. It's on Peacock, so you might get more people seeing Sasha and Naomi's return, assuming that is where that happens. If it happens on Monday Night Raw. And I think there was another part of the question that I'm forgetting, but that's those are my thoughts on the women's tag situation.
Kyle, did
well, I think my thing. Well, I think my thing about the whole Sasha Naomi thing is just because I keep hearing people saying that. I'm thinking to myself, well, why would Sasha want to be part of the tag team still? You would think she would be part of the singles act. She doesn't want to, that was the main, I don't know if that was the problem, that was, or just the way the titles were booked. I would think kind of mixture of both. I could understand she's not a tag team wrestler. Neither is Naomi. So it's like, it felt a little bit forced. So I don't know. At the time when they were teaming again, it was fine because I thought it was leading to something. But then when it didn't, it was like, okay, well, it was that type of thing. And then now that time has passed at this point. If they want to come back, I would think they would want to be singles wrestlers and not as a tag team. That's just not how I'm thinking of this. I don't know why they would be in the tag team title situation, even though Triple H is now in charge and wanted to do something with them too. I would think they would do something separately and not together. I think maybe that was the problem. I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but that's my thoughts with that.
And my response to that, of course, I'm not in Sasha Banks' head or Naomi's heads, but after a nearly 10-year career for Sasha in WWE, I think more than 10 years now for Naomi. I'm not looking at the calendar or anything. They walked out because they didn't feel, again, not in their heads, but, you know, everything that we know about the situation, they walked out because they didn't feel like their tag team championship run was being respected to the level that had been promised or expected, or that they believed was right. So clearly it is very, very important to them. So I guess we can believe that probably is a sticking point, although there may have been, you know, other stuff going on with Sasha because she's getting Hollywood nods. So she may have felt more of a safety net that helped her with the decision.
Yeah. Yeah. I think last thing I'll mention is Theory, like you said earlier before, he's just been, I'm very, I have no idea why he ever won Money in the Bank. I look at Theory and also Liv Morgan, the fact they, how they both won Money in the Bank and how they both been lacking of terms of how they've been booked their TV. Liv has been not treated as a top star as you would think she should be as a champion, but she's been defined down since she debuted. She hasn't been seen as a top level act, but it's how every other woman has been treated as. Then you see Theory, who's this other heel person who with the briefcase that does this. He kind of reminds someone how Seth Rollins was a little bit differently, because at least Rollins was winning matches and then was in main events and doing incredible work as Mr. Money in the Bank in 2014. You look at Theory, what Theory is doing, he just has his briefcase for no reason at this point. He's just not in any, he's not feuding with anyone. And it's not just, he's just been in limbo. Is that, and then if he cashes in, cashing on a heel in Roman Reigns, and even if he cashes in on Drew McIntyre at Clash of the Castle, I see him as a failed cash. And so what are they planning on doing with Theory, even though I do really like his character, but he's just been failing in terms of the way he's been booked and the way they treat in Theory ever since Money in the Bank. So what is the direction that he's going in? Because he's just been in limbo a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's still a purpose there, but I also think coming out of the Vince era and into the Triple H era, I think Triple H is kind of putting a pause on some things to not show his hand on everybody right away, or he's just collecting his thoughts. Tom?
Of course, what I said about Cody at the top was in a joking sense, like, oh, I've still got a spot, right? You know, Gargano's not going to, rocket right to that position if he does earn that spot at this level. But I do still feel that the ideal situation here is Cody returns, says that he wants to win specifically the WWE championship for his daddy, because that's the title that his daddy didn't win or promised him, or, you know, whatever it was that he laid out when he returned. And then we get the Money in the Bank version of the Dusty finish, where Cody triumphs, and it's a great feel-good moment that has so much history behind it. But that twerp, Austin Theory, comes and cashes in, and I think that is the way forward there. And I think it'll be a successful
no pun.
Cash in. So that's, yeah, so that's my prediction there. And I apologize, Kyle. Again, I feel like there was a second part of that, and I blanked on it again.
yeah, I think I just assume where that just where he's going to be going with him being, because it felt like to me, I also hated the fact that he just came in the freaking match without even doing when while he was kind of in the match. But it felt like he just came out of nowhere. But anyway, I think my last thing to talk about is Seth Rollins and Riddle here. It's like, I mentioned this for a few weeks now about these two, and it feels like they had that epic brawl tonight, and it felt like it was personal and all that stuff, and it's all well and good and all, but it's like they're just wrestling just to wrestle. There isn't really any backstory really with these two at all. They just said we have nothing for you two, which is a shame, I feel like. So we'll just put you together and have you wrestle, and whoever wins, we'll see what happens, but we don't know. So with Seth Rollins in particular, why did he have him do this type of thing with him all year where he's not been treated like how Theory's been treated or how every other person has been treated on Raw or either on SmackDown, really, where he's the only person he's been treated only on SmackDown. But he's a top star who should be treated like how Bobby Lashley's been treated on Raw and how Theory and everybody else is treated on Raw, but he's like a loser since WrestleMania, and this entire year in general feels like to me.
All right, Kyle, thanks for the call. Tom, we haven't talked much about him. What's your take on the continuation without really much? Or have you noticed the change since Levesque took over with Seth?
Not particularly. Of course, Seth Rollins, first ever NXT champion, so. Major endorsement there. And of course, Triple H was a huge part of getting Seth over on the main roster. Just about the closest definition to a Triple H guy as you can get this side of Tommaso Ciampa. So I'm curious to see where things go once there are more options for Seth. And I mean, you'd think there are going to be because of all the people coming in who would be fresh opponents for him. But specifically to Kyle's direction with the question, and I remember the other thing from his other question. He brought up Liv Morgan, but he was just making a comparison. So
yeah.
That was what I was thinking of there. But specifically to what Kyle was getting at, I agree with his interpretation of where Seth and Riddle are at right now. But the one consistent theme that is working for me with Seth this year, in this bit of a directionless year that he's having, still in an important spot, Cody's introductory feud and so on, reintroductory feud. The thing that I like about Seth right now is that when he finishes a feud, he gets on the mic, and right before his next feud starts, he goes, okay, finally, I can refocus on Roman Reigns. And then he gets interrupted by the next guy he's going to wrestle. And he's just like, oh my God, I'm trying to get back to the Universal Championship. So I like that he has, unlike Bayley right now, he has a clear mission. He doesn't bring it up a lot, but it's there and it's consistent. So I do appreciate that, especially after I'm one of the people who responded really well to the match that he had with Roman at the Royal Rumble. I loved what those two did together. And of course they've had great chemistry with and against one another over the years. But Seth has definitely, gotten me in a position where I am hotly anticipating whenever they do clash once more.
Cool. All right. Let's move to the mailbag for a few moments and then we'll wrap up here, Tom. Or, and we can
all
cover
right.
anything that we haven't yet that the callers and emailers don't bring up. Zach in Texas up first. The show tonight was an improvement over last week. There were no matches booked that couldn't have a clean finish. The most promoted match of the show was the actual main event, even if they didn't promote it using that terminology for some weird reason. We talked last week, Tom, about the main match being at the top of R3 this week, back to being the final match on the show. There were only two obvious missteps. One was booking Aliyah as Bayley's opponent in Bayley's first match back. I'm sorry, but Aliyah has no business in the ring with Bayley. The second misstep was saddling Johnny Gargano with Theory. WWE is forever retconning things that have happened, especially if it happened in NXT, but they have to acknowledge the way. I got that theory as Mr. Money in the Bank. Not that anyone thinks he's got a snowball's chance in hell of cashing in successfully, but Gargano deserves better for a first opponent, and we, the audience, deserve better than to have Theory's mediocrity shoved down our throats. I, of course, am established as disagreeing with Zach's opinion of Theory. The Aaliyah thing, I mean, it makes some sense. You know, that was a bit of a not gutsy call, I guess a hometown call. We got an email on that. I do think, you know, if Theory holds that Money in the Bank long enough, maybe somebody will have one or both belts and not Roman, and then maybe there'll be some believability to the cash-in. Otherwise, is that a problem? Does that take something away from the briefcase gimmick? If I think the prevailing thought is, yeah, you know, management likes Theory, and you can agree or disagree with it, but I don't think many people imagine that Theory is going to end Reigns' reign.
No, I don't think so, which is why I laid the scenario out the way my fantasy booking scenario the way I did. I'm generally in your position when it comes to Zach's takes. I respect his well thought out opinions, but I usually don't align with them. Although I did appreciate earlier in the night he saw Chad Gable do a flying headbutt, and he tweeted like, oh, I'll bet somewhere Tom Staupe didn't like that, because I've been very critical of people continuing to do that move over the years.
All right. Up next, hometown matches. This is William emailing. Wait, I'm not sure it's been pointed out, but I'm seeing a trend since Bolivek took over where hometown wrestlers get to actually win a match or at least have their moments. This is a definite departure from Vince McMahon, where it was a given wrestlers would eat it if they wrestled in their hometown in the past. Thoughts on that? It's refreshing in my mind. Also, Tom Ollett, is this sustainable? Like, do you want your booking to revolve around what city you happen to be in when it comes to who gets featured? And can you sometimes end up making, a decision that's not ideal just to sort of play into the city? Or is that kind of cool? It makes each week's show sort of stand out, and you imagine what town they're going to next. And they're going to Pittsburgh. I wonder if Kurt Angle will be there. I wonder if Britt Baker will be in the crowd. Well, that won't happen. Is it sustainable, or does it become predictable or tired? And what have you thought of it so far?
Yeah, it won't happen unless it's a takeover and the director doesn't know which person in the crowd he's cutting to. Not at the level that we saw tonight. Tonight was, again, it glorified house show, just felt very for the people in the audience. And they got, for the what I would presume is one-off babyface night for Kevin Owens, KO got a great reaction from a Canadian crowd, not hometown crowd, but Canadian crowd. And I just thought, like, you know what? Yeah, I believe that he probably will continue. I mean, maybe I'll be proven wrong, but I believe he probably will continue to be presented as a serious heel version of Kevin Owens. But just having the crowd react to him like a big deal, probably a safe move this early in that switch. I don't know. I could probably be very easily talked off of that position, but I want to believe in this the new vicious Kevin Owens. So I have myself looking for the positives there. I think to an extent, and maybe this is fresh in my mind just because of your torch talk with Brian Gewirtz to promote his new book that I've heard just very, very, very good things about. I don't read too many wrestling books, but I might pick that one up. You guys were talking about the celebrity guest era, and I think one of the, and I this is pure speculation because I haven't heard anyone in WWE, let alone Triple H, speaking of this specifically, but I mean, it's got to be recognized by this point, and whether Vince wanted to acknowledge it or play into it or not on a consistent basis, although, of course, we had Legends Nights, and, I mean, Stone Cold just main evented WrestleMania, so okay. But there is absolutely a consistent theme through casual fans that are just like, oh, yeah, that used to be cool. Oh, yeah, I liked when, all of these names that show up as guests now, I liked when they were wrestling. So having Kurt Angle show up, having Trish Stratus show up, and if the excuse is, well, it's, they're in their hometown, that's okay with me. And I don't mind that as a part of the attraction on a freaking 3-hour show.
All right, and up next, JB from Detroit. With Edge's return in Toronto tonight and Angle's return in Pittsburgh, will these hometown returns be a thing Triple H makes a habit of? Yes, we covered that. Two, every former member of The Way made an appearance tonight except for Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell. That's kind of a weird way to put it. I ate everything on my plate except for, you know, 3 out of 6 things. Do you think there's a good chance that both make a main roster appearance sooner or later? I know Candice may have another duty for the foreseeable future.
I have no read on Candice. That's a giant question mark. You know, even when Johnny was a question mark, I would have said that some level of WWE return would have been more likely there. Although I think I would have guessed, well, this also would have been under Vince. I think I may have even on a PWT Talks NXT said that Johnny could come back and resume his feud with Grayson Waller after Grayson Waller wins the NXT championship. That was my little fantasy booking scenario there. But as for Indy, man, I've liked Indy since before she signed, and I think she showed me some rougher edges than I had detected once I had more regular and thorough eyes on her once she was on NXT. But I still just think, you know, I guess it's an easy comparison to draw because it's the similar Australian sense of humor, but I think she's got a really similar sense of humor to Billie Kay. And Billy absolutely had her fans, still has her fans who are hoping for some level of WWE return at some point. And I think Indy scratches that itch also. I've said it over and over again to you that I always loved how Billie Kay sold for her opponents, and like, you know, Asuka would get in the ring and Billy would just freak out like, oh my God, no, Peyton, tag me. I don't want to get beat up by Asuka. And so, you know, great wrestler, maybe not, but great character that effectively put over her opponents. Absolutely. Yes. Indy is several steps above that in the ring, even if she's not a savant. So I personally, just subjectively, because I like her, would hope for Indy, but I'm also kind of worried about her on the NXT level right now. She gets little nods in segments here and there, but she's certainly not a regular presence at the moment, and I'm worried she's getting lost in the shuffle.
All right, number 3 out of 4. Why couldn't Mandy Rose have replaced Gigi Dolan for Toxic Attraction in the tournament as their 3-woman team? I think saving Mandy for a bigger return.
That does make a lot of sense. And Mandy also, for anybody who hasn't been watching her NXT run, because it's easy just to be like, oh, Mandy Rose, you know, she was never all that great. She's been consistently really good in this, in her NXT run. And she's frequently putting on very fun matches. It's not four horsewoman level, but I mean, she's really stepped it up and rededicated herself. I would agree with that. Yeah, I think that makes sense. And I know there were some issues at the border as well. I don't want to pin. No. I'm not going to bring that up in this context. I'm not going to pin Mandy with that. That wouldn't be it.
Yeah. So then number 4, this is the second time in under a month under Triple H Creative that the show started off immediately with a brawl. That's a little too frequent for my taste personally, as it seems like something they should keep rarer and special. As always, I love the show, and go VIP, everybody. Thanks, JB. I kind of have that feeling, too. I'm like, there's just a point where, yeah, I don't know. It felt like he was trying too hard to just start with a bang. And, yeah, so I could have done without it. I mean, I get it served a purpose, you know, because they announced that match for next week. But with Riddle,
yeah, and
for people who don't know.
Yes, and to Kyle's earlier point, like what else would they have done with Riddle and Seth? And I mean, they could have come up with something. They could have put their minds to it and come up with something good to heat up the feud a little bit more than where it's at. But I also think that there's no way that they weren't conscious of the fact that this was a backloaded Raw, and so it's like, all right, let's start with something hot. Okay, what do we got? Well, Seth and Riddle that makes sense to put here, I suppose. Although I thought the precise exact same thing. I believe it was the Raw before SummerSlam, so Triple H didn't write the show, but he was in charge at that point. And even if he hadn't been, that is how Raw opened between Logan Paul and The Miz. So it's just like, all right, this does feel like I saw it a month ago because I did.
Tom, is there anything else from tonight's show that you want to bring up?
Related to that segment, because I'm there in my notes, I was just looking at the backstage producers, and I was like, oh, I wonder if Joe Hennig will get another chance at being a backstage producer, since he was a Triple H guy once upon a time, and maybe it didn't work out for reasons that wouldn't make that possible. But I always liked him, and it just never panned out for him. Mm-hmm. I think we covered everything else. I'm just scrolling. Oh, Otis is, I'm just imagining there was a little tiny moment where Triple H was too busy to focus. He's too busy to focus on Otis at this point. He's just got way too much on his plate, but he was just walking around backstage and just pointed at Otis. And he was like, hey, grow that thing back out.
What have you noticed about the absence of irritants, as I called it, even with the announcers and the, you know, change in language? They're not strident about sports. I don't know if we heard the word sports entertainment now for a few weeks, or sports entertainer especially. And, you know, Corey Graves just flippantly, I shouldn't say flippantly, casually called it the women's tag team title tournament. You know, he didn't say championship. It's not that they've erased it entirely. Sometimes you still hear a little bit of clunkiness out of habit or who knows why, but it feels like that's dialed down. I also feel the announcing is different. I'm starting to feel like Jimmy Smith needs to learn a few more holds or moves because, you know, that wasn't a big part of what Vince wanted, but it's standing out. He goes, whoa, no. And then Corey Graves goes, yes. And then, you know, sometimes mentions a move or, you know, the name of the move and sometimes doesn't. But the announcers seem produced differently. We even have Byron Saxton, who, you know, has been around forever in the beats that you've covered, Tom, and he fought back against Corey Graves. You know, when Corey was threatened violence, Saxton said, I'd like to see you try it. I've seen you wrestle. And Graves said nothing in response. I don't think Vince would have ever loved Byron to fire back at Graves like that. So I guess I talk mostly about the announcers. You can talk about that or broaden it out.
Yeah, once upon a time, I hearkened back to the Newly Bros show in the early days of the pandemic that was hosted by between Riddle and Pete Dunne, and it was hosted by Byron Saxton, and he showed so much personality, and it was like, man, where's that guy been? And you said, well, what are some other good Byron Saxton moments? Because I think we're always looking for reasons to vouch for him, and I couldn't come up with any, but that's been one of the fun things about NXT 8 years back on PW Torch VIP is seeing where Byron's being reminded that Byron did have a voice at one point. And this is a time in NXT where even mid taping, they would switch how they were producing the commentary desk to like, okay, now for this next episode, you're a babyface commentator, and they'll switch. And the most recent episode that's on the feed right now, I'm gushing over how excellent I thought Byron was on commentary, especially during Charlotte versus Becky match, when he is vouching for Charlotte, and he has a bunch of really good lines as to why he thinks, you know, entitled queen heel Charlotte, who thinks she's better than everybody, is actually a great NXT Women's Champion. And I loved hearing that assertiveness from Byron. So yeah, I'm with that direct comparison to 8 years ago, I am noticing, hints of that, although he spent so much time as deferring to Corey Graves that I think that's very much what his on-screen persona is. But yeah, definitely some pushback and some differences with Michael Cole as well. But McAfee's always just kind of McAfee, but he's been off the leash the whole time. But yeah, I've nothing really further in detail to add beyond what we've already discussed previously and what you've been discussing on a routine basis as you pick up on it and notice patterns. I think the only thing during Trish's promo, I was like, ooh, are they not bathing the crowd in awkward red light anymore? Because so much of WWE's production, especially backstage and in the crowd, feels like a weird, surreal environment. And I like that the crowd isn't bathed in a weird red light because it's Raw, but the red light came back. I think I'll look out for that a little bit more and see if it's, and maybe this is the way it was before, and I just didn't recognize it as much, and I'm looking for the changes now, which is why I'm noticing it. But like NXT, you'll notice how the crowd is lit up, and then the lights go down for the match. And I'm wondering if it's like, okay, well, we're not going to put the lights down, but we put the red light on for the match. So maybe that's what I'm noticing. And the other thing, again, something that might so more of an addition rather than a subtraction, this might be something that they were doing, but I'm noticing the difference now. So I'm welcome to anybody correcting me if I am wrong here. But like, you remember in the late 90s when you just couldn't wait to get home and watch, you know, if you're my age, you just couldn't wait to get home and watch Monday Night Raw coming on at 9 p.m. And, you know, the camera was like being rotated around and moving around and, mm-hmm. you know, capturing the pyro. It wasn't just sitting still watching the pyro. And, it, you know, and JR yeah. would welcome us to whatever town. And it was exciting. And you felt like, oh, this is a giant event that I'm tuning into. And there was a period there where they, out of necessity, got rid of the introductory pyro. And now it's back. But it still just sort of felt like an obligatory, like, oh, okay, they're setting off the pyro and the song isn't as exciting as it used to be. And you know, that's purely subjective as well. But I've noticed over the past 2, maybe 3 weeks that the camera's sort of like rotate, like the camera operator is sort of like rotating the camera a bit more, or like tonight they were like stepping from side to side. Like the camera operator was running into a position while the pyro was going off. Granted, we were coming out of the brawl, so maybe there's an exception there. But there's just more energy behind it. Like one of the most basic things that I was taught in film school, and sure, if you have a really assertive vision, you don't want to subscribe to this, but you have to learn the rules before you can break them. And if mm-hmm. you are filming a party scene, because I was filming a party scene for one of my student shorts, I was just filming it. I was just standing there. And I was holding the camera, and I was just standing there capturing the shot that I wanted, that I had storyboarded for myself. And the instructor came over and took the camera right out of my hands, and he put it at a low angle, and he started like waving it around and making it look like there was some real energy. And the scene is so much more lively, as it's a really basic cheat to make that happen. But when I was editing the footage, it was like, oh, wow, this is so much more lively than the shots I captured when I was doing the camera operating. So I learned something there. And I'm seeing that when the pyro goes off more, and it feels there's just like that little hint of when I was a teenager running home to well, you know, 9 p.m. So not right. But you get where I'm just like, oh, man, I can't wait for Raw to start. And it's just it explodes in my face. And I'm like, yes, Raw's on. Thanks for welcoming me, JR. So I think that might be a conscious direction there.
Tom, thank you. It's been a blast.
Yeah, likewise, Wade. Thanks again.
Great catching up. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. That's Tom Stell. Check him out on various PW Torch VIP podcasts. And I'm Wade Keller, and I am signing off for tonight.